start with two apologies. One is to the listener and to you both in a way. I'm absolutely riddled with the novel coronavirus.
Mm-hmm. You've never looked better on it, though.
Ben, you do actually. I've got to pick my cap on that. You're coming across as absolutely classic, or almost sort of RSC ill.
Yeah, I was speaking poison with two tongues.
Yeah,
that's what Banquo's ghost.
You wish it was Banquo's ghost is on his feet, mate. He's vengeful. He's spectral, but he's absolutely full of beans.
It's withered Victorian child, isn't it?
Very much background. Yeah, the theatrical background artist.
Yeah.
You'd be in a pretty confusing. I can't finish that sentence. Sorry.
Well, that's the problem.
No, that's
I think that's because Henry's gone straight to RSE, which you're not up to today.
No, well,
think of whoever they've put upstage left in the back of Les Mis. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
French orphan.
French orphan.
You're looking quite French orphan. If this was your RADA audition, Ben, and you were going for French orphan, you'd smash it. They'd be like, you're in. Don't even bother finishing there.
I've got to say, Henry, I think when you apply for drama school, like RADA, you don't apply for a specific role which you then learn for the entire time you're in drama school.
don't you? Oh, I see. All right. So what is it, just general characters?
Isn't it mainly just racking up a good store of drinking stories that you can then tell on the sofas of chat shows throughout your life? So you need to really get those in through the RADA years.
It's all about the networking anecdotes.
It's networking anecdotes. But also you do learn the ability to be able to breathe from any part of your body. So you can breathe from your shins. Now breathe from your shins. Say that line again, but from your calves. Speak from your calves.
You learn how to suit a leotard as well.
Yeah.
And if you're a bit dry on anecdotes by the end of your degree, you can go off and do a period in Rep in Cleethorpes or Weymouth and boost the anecdotes.
To boost it up a bit.
Yeah.
Mike's video has gone to, I think, first Gulf War on the ground news footage.
Oh, no. Why is it doing that?
So it's...
Hang on. I'll see if I can do anything with the old...
I mean, he's now talking in the back. He's gone in the background. We can see his face in the present. Well, in the past. Now his face has disappeared. Ben is really ill. Ben. I mean, it's got cursed step written all over it, hasn't it?
We've
not had a fully cursed step for quite a few series. But I think this is a cursed step. I'm also suffering from quite bad stomach acid. I mean, I know no one really cares right now, but...
No, that's an interesting thing. So...
Yeah.
What have you been eating to cause this?
I think possibly too many Rennies, and I've gone around the other end. I've gone around the other side.
You're so anti-acid that you've...
I've become pro-acid, because the pH tape, obviously the pH numbers eventually, I think, reset and start back at the beginning, don't they?
That's right.
Sorry, I'm back. I don't really know what's going on with that. I should be in optimal Wi-Fi zone. I'm in the living room.
Mike, your voice and your face have no relationship to each other whatsoever.
Okay.
But this sounds like your RADA audition's going really bad.
RADA PhD level stuff.
He's done the full voice face deassociation.
It's to prevent forgeries, is what it is. It's an anti-piracy method.
Oh my God, I've got such bad stomach acid, it's unreal. This is a cursed step, Mike, we've decided.
Oh no.
Physically, Mike, have you got anything going wrong, or are you...
I feel tremendous, but I've got absolutely nothing to say.
But also, but your voice and face have got... It's like they've never met. There's nothing...
So just to explain to the listener, you know, this is across our online system. Mike's internet's a bit slow, so it's not keeping up with him necessarily.
So my face is maybe coming through my Devonshire internet, whereas my voice might be coming through the old telegram wires. It's a little bit faster.
But the colour coding, the colour contrast is coming from the first Gulf War. I maintain that.
Yeah, and the light is being posted.
Yeah, the light's on snail mail. My stomach acid is trying to come out of my mouth. I've never had this
before.
Why
have you got stomach acid?
I think it's actually because of it's the slow rot of the Pret subscription. It's just the
oh, really?
It's constant caffeine now in the system. It's just it's a rolling
caffeine. The mayonnaise, the heavy duty mayonnaise content of the Pret sandwiches isn't dampening down. It's not enough anymore.
It's not allowing the caffeine to disperse.
Golly, who'd have thought that eating solid prêt-à-manger meals for the 4 months in a row would actually lead to a degree of indigestion.
I know. But it's a rolling boil of acid I've now got.
You've got a real B-side super-size me phenomenon going on.
Yeah,
you?
That's what I've got. I've got the sort of middle-class super-size me, yeah.
You could never make a documentary out of it, but it is horrible to watch.
Yeah.
But now, because of the sort of roiling acid that's down there, you can basically just... You can lower anything basically down your throat and just immediately gets obliterated.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you could eat now a bag of nails and you'd be fine.
Yeah, yeah. It's a party trick because I can put a nail on a string. I can lower it down there, bring it up again, and it's clean.
You could be one of those guys that eats a plane for the Guinness Book of Records.
What, eat a plane?
That way, yeah, every decade or so, someone eats a plane, don't they? Well,
yeah, they claim do.
I think you're referring to the French plane eater sort of star of the mid-20th century, Mange Tout.
Was that what he went by?
That's what he went by. It was Mange Tout.
And he really did, didn't he?
He really did Mange Tout. He ate a plane. But I think the caveat was it took him absolutely ages.
Well, they say, don't you, across an average human life, you will eat a plane without noticing.
That's right.
In your sleep, yeah.
Yeah.
Just the seven a night.
Well, every time you go on a plane, you breathe in bits of the plane.
Yeah.
So that counts for quite a lot of it.
If you live under a flight path, bits will fall off, won't they?
Yeah, but it's only once in a generation that someone shits out the entire plane intact.
And that's the disappointing truth of the Bermuda Triangle.
Exactly, yeah.
That's why no one ever really wants to solve it.
Yeah.
I have a second apology.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
So this goes out to a man called Charlie. So last weekend, I was in Aberystwyth Arts Centre.
Performing?
I was performing a shit...
Oh God!
In this anecdote.
Okay, you're in the loo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Digestive tract talk. Oh yeah.
I was having a shit.
All right. Yeah. We get it.
Yeah. Very much. COVID's really taken out your nuance, hasn't it?
It really has. It's one of the first things to go. Isn't it? Any sense of nuance whatsoever. Any sense of verbal playfulness. Absolutely gone out the window. Well, in the old days, you'd have said, in your pre-COVID days, you'd have said something like,
attending to my ablutions and bidding well to the haddock of Cardigan Bay.
Yeah.
I don't call my shits the haddock of Cardigan Bay, Mike.
I was, in a sense, chewing over an idea with my ass. Something like that.
Something really, quite really lyrical, yeah. Like that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I was doing my daily crossword with my ass.
Nice.
Okay.
And I, after that had concluded, I opened the cubicle door.
Yeah.
And literally within a millisecond of that happening, well, I opened it and there was a man looking directly at me.
Oh, wow.
And he said, "Benjamin Partridge."
God.
Oh,
good God.
that's not what you need, is it?
And it was a man called Charlie.
Okay.
And I have to say, it was very nice to meet Charlie, as it's always nice to meet a listener to this podcast. But he's not just any listener. Mm-hmm. He is the listener who created the sort of Led Zeppelin track, including Henry's vocals. He's also sent in a number of excellent theme tunes. So it's really nice to meet him. I met his dad, who I think is also a listener. I met his two-year-old son.
Where was the dad? He was in the next cubicle or peeking over the cubicle wall?
This is all lovely again if it wasn't in the toilet.
This is when we'd repaired to the lobby.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that was all really nice, actually. And so it's very nice to meet Charlie. Hello, Charlie. Thank you for being so nice. And then the thing I want to apologise for is, but I can't quite work out if I need to apologise for this, is that when I was...
You're taking the shit again?
Yeah. So when I was taking
so
the shit...
So glad we've gone back to that moment.
Well, Ben's got such a good read of what the listener really wants to hear about, doesn't he?
So you're sitting, as usual, side saddle on the toilet.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a full cowboy outfit.
Yeah.
But the cowboy, the outfit is very clever because it faces the front. So it looks like you're facing the front, but you're actually side saddle.
A little box of sugared plums on your left knee. Yeah,
you've dressed up the toilet to look like a stallion.
Yeah.
A little holster for your Winchester rifle down its side.
When I went into the toilet room, I thought I had the room to myself.
Mm. Oh, no.
So whilst attending to my shit, I got a message on my phone saying that a podcast appearance of mine on another podcast on which I've been a guest had been uploaded, and they'd uploaded a clip to Instagram. I thought, oh, I'll listen to that. I'll see what clip they've used, see how that's come out. So I essentially sat there shitting whilst listening to my own voice.
Okay, yeah.
Then I finished up, and when I opened the cubicle, there was a man standing there, which was Charlie. So I think there's a chance that he essentially heard me shitting whilst listening to my own voice.
He can only conclude that you're an absolute monster.
He'll have a very low opinion of you. Don't meet your heroes, don't, because
sometimes they can only launch a bowel movement from the sound of their own voice.
That's what I would have concluded in his position.
And they can't even be bothered to sing to their own bowels, that they have to use a recorded sound. It's very messy.
Oh, the blessed relief of knowing that I'm out there in the media. Oh, relax. Yes, relax and go. Yeah. I'm getting out there in the world, and you're getting out there into the toilet bowl, just like I'm getting out there. But my voice, I have a voice at both ends, both of them flourishing and flying. Go.
Ain't no toilet brush that can scrub me off the airwaves. Go.
Poor Charlie.
Yeah. Poor Charlie.
So you've really been through it, old Ben, haven't you?
Yeah, poor Ben.
You're growing paler by the second, even as I'm looking at you. It's like you're deflating.
Ben, you are looking tiny.
Mm.
Like your clothes are too big for you. Yeah, this is in a week.
Dried out husk of a man.
It's a cursed step. You know, abandon hope, all ye who continue listening.
Maybe it's quite good in terms of like sort of karmic yin-yang balance. Maybe those people who listen to the ep, perhaps the fact we're sucking up all the curse, maybe they'll have the best day of their lives.
It's a kind of spiritual enema for them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The old audio purge.
Now, obviously, there's a bit of an issue, isn't there, at this stage in the podcast, of a cursed app.
Yeah.
Because, obviously, the protocols are slightly different. You never know what's going to happen if you turn on the beam machine during a cursed app.
It's also turning on the beam machine when there's a live virus in situ. It's quite high risk as well.
Double trouble, isn't it? I mean, my attitude is essentially it's the medieval approach to these things, which is when you're in the valley of the worm, you keep ploughing, don't you?
You declare fealty to the worm. You get on your knees in front of that worm.
If it's Satan's bread we end up making, that's better than not being bacon. Does that make sense, Ben?
This week's topic, as sent in by Rowan, is the Trojan War.
Oh, crumbs.
I mean, that's Game of Thrones.
Welcome to Trojan. Is Trojan a place?
No, Troy.
Troy, of course.
Welcome to Trojan.
Welcome to Troy. Troy's real.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's real. Is it real? It's sort of Turkey, isn't it?
I don't know. Possibly.
I thought it was a bit of mythology going on.
I think it's somewhere in between the mythology and the history zone, isn't it? I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe. I don't know.
But Turkey, though, right? I mean, you've got the Turkish heritage, Henry. So you can talk us through us the.
You're basically Trojan.
I'm basically Trojan. I'm basically Hector.
Yeah.
Helen of Troy?
Yeah, Helen of Troy, the face that launched 1,000 ships.
Very good.
So was it because of her? Because had she been kidnapped or something?
Paris nabbed her, but I think it was consensual, wasn't it? My memory is that it was a consensual nabbing. An elopement, perhaps.
Oh.
Of Paris and Helen. Off they go to Troy. And then the Greeks were very cross.
Is Paris Trojan. Right.
Well, he's called Paris, which is confusing.
Doesn't help at all. And she's called Helen of Troy, even though she wasn't of Troy.
What?
She was of Greece.
It's the classic thing. It's like Charing Cross Hospital is actually in Hammersmith.
It's like Leeds Castle is actually in Kent.
It's the usual. It's the honestly. And it's been going on forever, this, right back to Homer.
God, it's like when they moved Wimbledon FC to Milton Keynes, isn't it?
Oh, very non-Mike reference that I love hearing Mike say.
Bloody hell, where did that come from?
Nice. Did you like that? Was that right as well? Was that correct? It's because I lived in Tooting for 5 years when it happened, and it was that's what everyone was talking about. They were really cheesed off.
Well, it's very similar to that, isn't it, the Trojan War?
Yeah.
And one thing I will say about the Iliad is...
Yeah.
I think it is in the category of books that I've read about 2% of.
Okay.
I think I did have a stab at it at one point. It's quite long.
Okay. I see your 2% and I de-raise you by 2%. I mean, I love a myth, don't get me wrong, but I think my myth intake has very much been sort of childhood books of Osborne's great Greek myths.
Right, I've looked it up. Troy is in modern-day Turkey.
Is it? Fact.
Yeah.
In terms of ancient cities in Turkey, I know that there's a city called Ephesus that I've visited in Turkey. There's an ancient city, and there's loads of them. There's like Ephesus 1, Ephesus 2, and all the way up to 7, because they kept on basically, as far as I understood it as a child, whenever the tide changed, they were like, oh no, we've built it in the wrong place, and they kept on having to rebuild it.
Well, I'm just looking this up, and there were 9 Troys.
Oh, were there 9 Troys? Yeah, this is the thing.
Is
in
that
those
what they
days.
Were up to?
They keep on rebuilding.
Really?
Well, I'm just looking at where all the different Troys were.
Yeah.
They seem to be in the same place.
Okay.
So pretty much on top of each other, just in a similar area.
We've spoken before, right, about how I can't understand how old towns and cities get buried beneath earth.
Yeah.
It doesn't, yeah.
Because it
doesn't make sense.
We're not, you know, there isn't constant earth rain, for example, that we have to deal with.
Yeah.
And I've had lots of emails about this, with people basically saying I'm an idiot. But then when they try and explain it, it's never that convincing to me.
No, I know. Okay. Well, because... The only theory that works is a lasagnaing, as Mike said, a lasagnaing of the earth, which means the earth is a kind of a circular lasagna. Okay, A, that's impossible. The nearest thing would be a rice ball and arancini. Right? And no one's suggesting the arancini
in
the world.
That barely obeys the laws of physics as it is.
Exactly. It's already impossible. It's an impossible snack, the arancini. It doesn't make sense. And we think it was created when an Italian chef and Einstein fell into a black hole together. It's the only
thing to have emerged from a black hole.
Yeah.
Is an arancini.
Yeah, that's it's the only plausible explanation for an arancini.
How are you explaining calzones?
Stop the podcast. Stop recording the podcast. We've gone too deep. This is too dangerous, Ben. Are you willing to go here? Are you willing to... If you want me to answer that question, Ben, are you willing to go on the journey that goes with it? Because take my hand, my friend. I'm leading you for very, very dark country. With excellent catering, though. The food is superb where we're going. But everything else about it is awful. But the food's incredible.
It does sound like Italy.
Calzone? Mm. Is that when...
It's a tectonic smushing.
Is that when... You take a pizza and you imagine, you know that science thing where they go, imagine an ant on a tablecloth. Now imagine if we fold the tablecloth onto the ant. That's time in a black hole.
Yeah. Except they have never ever done that with an ant. That's the only thing I'd say to that. You've introduced the ant. There's never an ant.
Well, it just
is. Or if there is an ant, it's there by mistake.
There's often an ant on a tablecloth, and it can happen. It's impossible. I mean, the theory should be robust enough to deal with an ant being there. If all it takes is an ant for your theory to get down the toilet, then maybe it wasn't worth the paper it was written on. Now, so is that when they take a calzone and they go, imagine a calzone, if there was an ant on the calzone and you folded it in half? That's what happens in a black hole.
Well, that's an ant's calzone.
That's an ant calzone. Is a calzone...
whatever's inside is the topping, right?
Is a calzone a pizza that's been folded in half?
Yeah.
I mean, some people would try and make out that it's that simple, yeah.
Sorry. I didn't mean to. I've just actually infuriated the calzone chefs who listen to this podcast.
It's a sort of GCSE level explanation of a calzone is where we're up to as a society.
No, but I'd say an arancini is in the same of... It's closer to a Scotch egg in terms of being hard to explain. Mm-hmm. I mean, how the hell do you explain a Scotch egg?
Well, Scotch eggs are created in the molten heart of the of the Earth, aren't they?
Well, they were created at the same moment that the universe started, we think. And they're just knocking about. There's still just quite a few of them knocking about. They've accumulated around pubs, something to do with dark energy. They've accumulated around, well, the nicer ones have accumulated around gastropubs.
The fact that miniature Scotch eggs are becoming more prevalent is a troubling sign, I think, to theoretical
business,
end of days stuff. Yeah.
Well, isn't it that, Mike, as the universe constantly expands, the Scotch eggs actually stay the same size?
Yes.
Everything else is expanding inside.
Okay, so that's the other theory, isn't it? Yeah, of course. Yeah. The Scotch egg is the constant.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
And when a Scotch egg is the same size as a molecule...
Scotch zero.
When we reach Scotch zero.
Scotch zero. Which at the moment is predicted to happen around about the same time as Scottish independence, probably. The rate it's happened... What? Is it?
What I can't work out is whether you think that means it's going to happen soon or in a long time.
I don't know. I just something to do with the fact that Labour won that by-election means that something to do with Scottish independence is... looking less likely soon or something. I don't know.
And what's her name's husband is...
Yeah. Bob Sturgeon.
Is he called Bob?
I don't know.
It'll do, though, won't it?
It'll do.
There's a good chance he is.
Wee Bobby Sturgeon.
Oh, wee little Bobby Sturgeon.
Again, is that a libel thing? Me saying his...
Not if we got the wrong name.
I've looked up Bobby Sturgeon. Bobby Sturgeon was a shortstop and the second baseman in Major League Baseball who played between 1940 and 1948 for the Chicago Cubs.
Blimey. So how did he meet Nicola?
Crumbs from there to... What a journey.
Our foreign listeners won't know this. In Scotland, there is an independence movement. It is led by the SNP, the Scottish National Party, the leader of which was Nicola Sturgeon. And there's a suggestion that Nicola Sturgeon's husband, Bobby Sturgeon, wee Bobby Sturgeon.
That's disappointing.
It's the least
isn't it?
Glamorous bit of that's ever happened.
And it's also the shame. It's a shame that the future of an entire nation ends up sort of hinging on in terms of, isn't it?
They could have done it were it not for that.
Yeah. It's all classic cursed step stuff, this, isn't it?
Well, I'm worried that. I might have to just paste in the words allegedly over and over again through that. Allegedly.
And also you might have to cut in the words for the topic. And today's topic is rice balls and Nicola Sturgeon. You have to do
today's topic is wee Bobby Sturgeon.
I like the feeling of a cursed app, you know. I really feel like the flip flops are off, my feet are in the sand.
Mm-hmm. You're gonna pumice your verrucas.
Let's pumice them down.
Got to say, it's really interesting watching Henry unshackled from any feeling of, like, he just knows this is guilt-free.
Absolutely guilt-free pressure.
Unshackled from responsibility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To which he is very loosely shackled in the first place.
I know.
I would say.
But he's absolutely loving it. He's loving it.
Well, here are the main things I remember about Troy.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Go on.
Achilles.
Yeah.
And his famous heel.
He was a bit of a ledge, wasn't he?
He was a ledge. But he was dipped into the River Styx as a child by his parents.
Was it by his parents?
Bobby Attenborough.
Bobby Attenborough.
Yeah.
And
Jennifer Sparta.
And Jennifer Sparta. They dipped him into the River Styx, and that made him immortal, except the bit they were holding on to, which was his heels. Which didn't get dipped in, which is why always reverse dip. Always remember to reverse dip if you're dipping your children into a magical river.
Yeah, or stop going to battle in bloody sandals, right?
Good bloody point, mate.
Put some proper sturdy shoes on, mate.
I remember seeing the film Troy with Brad Pitt.
Mm.
Very, very boring film. I didn't enjoy it. And I must have been like 14, something like that. And I went to the cinema. And obviously the kind of denouement of the film is he gets an arrow through his...
Groin? No.
Heel.
His heel, of course. Sorry, heel, yeah. From Paris. from Paris, isn't it? Yeah.
And obviously then that's the end of the film, pretty much. And the film finished and the lights came up and then I heard a boy behind me say to his friend, "You only got shot in the bloody heel." And they're both like, "What the fuck was that?"
They hadn't been concentrating. Do they do the backstory of the heels in the film?
No, they don't.
Do they not?
They don't. They assume you know it.
So have you seen Troy as well, Mike?
I have seen it.
See, Troy is in a weird... It's a weird category of film now for me, which is, when will it ever be the right time for me to watch the film Troy? I mean, obviously, any time before today would have been good because of the topic.
I think we're talking very long-term rehab after a sort of crane accident,
yeah,
is what we're talking, probably. Yeah. You need to be hospitalised and completely immobile for, I would say, 9 months. And at that point, you'll get to the point where someone's putting Troy up in front of your eyeballs. Because by then, Ben and I have stopped coming in to read to you.
Yeah.
That stopped long ago.
Well, you'd be saying things like, well, he's just not Henry anymore. And the doctor would be saying, no, he absolutely is Henry. He can understand everything.
He just can't move his legs because we've pinned him.
He can understand everything. He's whip smart. And you'd be going, but I don't think he's actually as Henry anymore.
I'd have done the memorial after day four, probably, yeah, most likely.
Well, you'd have made an effigy of me and buried it, which some saw as tasteless. Didn't you? Well, I was actually... At that point, I was actually in my physio stage and my rehab. I was actually quite okay. I was fine. Playing tennis again. But Mike went ahead with the old dummy funeral, didn't he? Ben, you're about to say something.
I think he looks like he's about to expire.
It was one or the other.
We might have been about to hear his death rattle.
Or it might have been final words. Final banter.
Okay, final words.
Yeah.
Did you know that John Bean is in the film Troy, bye?
Not a lot of people say bye at the end. It's nice, actually. Nice to have a bye.
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 Put a full stop on it. Lovely stuff. I didn't remember that about Sean Bean at all, no. But it works. Like, it makes sense. It makes perfect sense.
Of course
it is. It's the right era for Sean Bean to be popping up in Hollywood stuff.
I've not even seen it, but I can tell you right now, he's Patroclus, isn't he? I bet he is. Any money.
Who's Patroclus?
Friend of Achilles. Like, he's friend guy. He's other beefy friend.
Right.
No, he is playing, hello, I'm Odysseus, king of Ithaca.
He's Odysseus.
Yeah.
Master of the Minotaur. And vanquisher of the Sirens. Yeah. All right. You got a problem with that?
If anyone here asks a question about me more, I've got to fucking have them. Do you understand? I'm sick of talking about that.
She was Athena, goddess of the wind. No, who was she? who was it? Who was Odysseus's mum?
She was Margaret, goddess of allotments.
Yeah, all right. She was a good woman.
No, his mum, according to Wikipedia, is Anticlea, the wife of King Laertes.
Oh, I was thinking of Oedipus. You said Odysseus, though, didn't you?
Oh, Mike, yeah. You Wally.
Cursed up.
I'm Odysseus, king of Ithaca and Sheffield.
Twin with Sheffield.
The other person who comes up on the cast list I'm pleased about, and I actually remember because at the time I thought it was funny, playing the role of Velior.
Yeah.
I don't know who that is.
Inventor of Velcro.
I think he's like a sort of elder, like a wise elder.
I have a new way to seal your sandals.
Trevor Eve.
Trevor Eve?
Trevor Eve.
I don't remember Trevor Eve being in that at all.
Also, playing the character of Nestor is a man called John Shrapnel.
John Shrapnel?
Brilliant name.
To me, my guess from that name is that that's Sean Bean playing another character. He'll make up it because he's so good in these films that he'll want to play several roles and he'll make up a name.
He needs to double up, doesn't he?
Yeah. So John Shrapnel is exactly the kind of name that Sean Bean would make up.
And then Sean himself has to ring up the production and say, whatever you do, I won't do a scene with John Shrapnel.
And I won't, also, I won't eat lunch with Shrapnel. Whatever you do, do not put me in the same...
He's very good, though. Give him a good part.
He's very good.
But just don't
pay him well. Pay him well.
Pay him well.
Don't put us together.
But don't pay him as well as Sean... No, pay him slightly better than Sean Bean, actually.
Mm. Although I will share a lift. I will share a lift with him, though.
I will share a lift with him, but not at the... Will I? Yeah. I can't remember. Is it a terrible film?
I remember it being quite bad.
It's very it's very sort of macho. Everyone's being very sort of serious about spears.
Yeah, it's all very serious. That's what I remember is this is very... It's
completely humourless.
The thing is, though, Mike, now they would make a sort of humorous version in the kind of Marvel style, and that would be even worse, which would be sort of wisecracking Greek myth people, which I just think would be...
Yeah.
Is what they do, though.
There'd be some sassy demigods.
Yeah.
Agamemnon saying things like, so that happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, God, oh, yeah. God. Did you just say that? I said that. Well, that kind of self,
yeah.
that self answer yeah. of like, yeah, deconstructing. Yeah. Big explosion goes on. He's like, hey, that was a big explosion. Yeah, I'm aware of the explosion being big. Yeah, I'm aware of us walking away from the explosion. Or with a modern soundtrack, or with Taylor Swift playing.
Thing is, though, if you give those lines to Jeff Goldblum, it somehow works.
That's because he's the greatest actor of all time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. In Goldblum's hands, of course, he can weave gold out of it. Weaving gold from turds. That's the title of his masterclass.
It's almost too easy to do an impression of him that's really good. Is it? I don't know if this is a good impression of Jeff Goldblum or not. Is it? I don't know. Is it? Isn't it?
And then break into jazz piano.
Welcome to the Jeff Goldblum Zone. Because I think we should do something with a horse in the... You should go in the horse with the people and give it a present to the Trojans. Was that too much? That's too much.
It's somewhere between Goldblum and Trump doing the sort of sprint with some hurdles.
China. China.
Yeah.
China. China. Odysseus is the one who's clever. That's his thing.
Did he come up with the horse?
Oh, yeah. Oh, classic, of course.
Yeah.
That's what we used to do on Bolton when we needed to get into a pub that had a lock-in, but we weren't letting us in. We'd all dress up as a horse and then just beat up the guy on the door. The horse thing was just for a laugh, to be honest. Yeah, is that fair enough? Yeah, so Odysseus comes up with that plan. They break it. I mean, that's why the phrase is, don't accept a horse.
That's the phrase, isn't it? It's probably quite a good rule of thumb, isn't it? If you weren't expecting,
I think for most people, I think for 99.9% of people in the world, don't accept a horse. I mean, if I accepted a horse, it'd be absolutely unmanageable. Two up, two down terrace house, no carport, tiny garden. It's not going to happen.
Exactly. Don't accept a horse.
No.
Also, they're a lot of work. I mean, that would have been a slower way to bring the Greeks down. Just give them loads of horses because they are a lot of work.
Just destroy the economy. Gift horses as an economic weapon.
Exactly.
Isn't that what China does? This is for real. Which is that they'll gift you two pandas and you go, oh, brilliant, thanks for that. And then you realise that you have to build like a £50 million panda enclosure and then it costs millions to keep them alive. Yeah.
And also all the writers and comedians have to spend all their energy coming up with new jokes about how the pandas aren't having sex, which creates a huge brain drain. A lot of the nation becomes concentrated on trying to come up with fresh takes on the panda sex joke when normally they'd be coming up with ideas for new kinds of weapons. Yeah, the horse gift. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about the horse gift. That's a bit of a weird gift.
Mm.
I like the idea of a version where they give them more of a traditional present, which would be a huge box of chocolates, right? Mm-hmm. So a massive box of chocolates they leave outside.
And Odysseus says, well, you got Sean Bean hiding in a strawberry cream.
Oh, I'm not going in a bloody southern strawberry, oh, lighty-tighty cream. Stick me in a choco nut. What I'm thinking is, you know, like when you get chocolates, certainly in the 1980s, you get chocolates as a gift. You'd eat the top layer. Then they go, is there a second layer?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a second layer? Lift
it
up.
Excitement.
Sean Bean. It's all warriors.
All warriors. With a horse.
And a horse as well. Just a good measure. Yeah, so long story short, Achilles eventually fights Hector. Achilles kills Hector, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Drags him round.
It's like a big soap opera that I just haven't seen.
It is sort of like a soap opera, I think.
But there's a certain kind of person who knows all of this stuff.
Mary Beard. Well, classicists.
Well, it annoys me because on University Challenge, right?
Yeah.
I'm quite good at it in general. I can get a lot of questions right.
Can you know?
I'm quite smug about it.
Hey.
But there'll always be the mother of Achilles, which... And I'm like, No.
Oh, that is the irony. Is that's your Achilles heel?
Very
do you still
nice.
Pub quiz? Thank you, Henry.
I do when I can. Yeah, absolutely.
Because you used to do it with Neenan a lot, didn't you? Back in the day,
me and Neenan won one only a couple of weeks ago. We won £50.
Oh,
blimey!
I can tell you, I've never won a pub quiz in my life.
My experience of the pub quizzes is going, oh, Shame there's a pub quiz in this pub. It's really ruining my evening in this pub. Happened to be just last week.
I think I'd like to be good in a pub quiz, but I think I've enjoyed pub quizzes, but I'm the guy around the table who's got nothing to offer. Nothing. There's no category where they're like, Mike, what do you think?
Yeah.
And then Mike, doesn't happen.
Yeah. It's more Mike, can you get us some more pints? And just shut up.
Yes. You've absolutely cracked it. Yes, that is exactly what happens with me on a pub quiz.
No, but what I do in a pub quiz is I'll sort of always have an energy about me that suggests the next round is probably my chosen topic round. So it's a kind of like, okay, you know, this one's for you guys, but coming up. But yeah, no, for now, this will be for you. And then you just keep that going till the end of the night, and then it's picture round, and then before you know it, it's gone. You've claimed your part of the prize money. You've taken your tithe.
You've moved on to the next city.
And you move on to the next city, and they'll never find you. They'll find your fake face. They'll find that lying in the pub car park. They'll find the fake face.
That bastard.
That absolute bastard. And look, he was wearing we should have guessed he was wearing a classic traditional wise face. No wonder he agreed to let him onto our team, even though we had never previously met him, and also agreed to split the prize money with him.
We should have smelled a rat when he gifted us that horse. Right, who amongst us is going to look after this horse?
What am I going to do with this bloody horse?
Oh, I'll have to just try and get myself cast in a historical or battle-based film with it again. I wonder what other parts I can play in this one, and what fictional names I can make up for them.
Gary Shrapnel.
Derek Workbench.
I will not share a scene with Derek Workbench unless one of us is green screened for it and it's done in post.
Cedric Wheeliebin.
But if it's going to help you fund the film, I'm prepared to share a Winnebago with Cedric Wheeliebin, but not to be in a scene with him. We've got a very peculiar relationship. We both like the same sort of pizza, so if you just send us one pizza. I'm aware that you've got costs to look out for, so if you just send us one pizza, we'll share it. But I will not be in the same scene as him! And only one of us will attend the cast party, and it'll be me!
And for God's sake, let's hope we don't both get nominated for Oscars. I'm not Mrs. Doubtfiring the Oscars again.
And if one of us gets COVID, we both tend to get it at the same time. Don't know why! Somebody's been sharing the same pizzas.
Well, is that the Trojans?
I reckon it could be the Trojans.
I mean, it was specifically the Trojan War we were asked to talk about.
Oh, was it supposed to be the Trojan War?
Yeah.
Oh, darn, it's too late now. We've recorded it, but we could have... If we'd known that was the angle to take on it.
Because, Henry, you're one of the foremost experts in the Trojan War, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. I'm up there with all the others. Mary Beard.
Derek Sideburns. And Algernon Bloke.
I could have done. But instead, we've ended up obviously just talking about an analysis of Trojan society and Trojans in themselves.
Probably on the Patreon extras, there'll be some absolutely extraordinary stuff about the actual Trojan War. I expect, or not.
Now it's time to read your emails. We're not going to play our version of the email jingle. We've got one in from Will.
Brilliant.
I recorded a version of the email jingle based on the loop and arrangement of a song I wrote with a friend many years ago. Mm. We called our duo Downlands Kankara, who was the horse from the Lloyds Bank adverts.
Mm.
Will also writes, P.S. Apologies to all German listeners for butchering the names of the urban districts of Bremen.
Mm. Oh.
So I think they're going to feature somehow in this music. So let's see.
Okay, great.
Here we go. Right.
Thank you, Will.
Brilliant.
Mitte, Heaven, Neustadt, Oppe-Vierland, Ruchting, Goldmessers,
Tierhausen, Traum, Oschlicht, Neustadt.
You must give thanks
to the postmasters who came before.
This represents progress.
I really like that.
That was absolutely I got into that. I was in a different place. Mm-hmm. I wasn't even.
What place were you in?
Genuinely enjoying that.
Was it Bremen?
I think it might have been Bremen or my own personal inner Bremen. I would listen to an album of that, of whatever that is. If that was on Spotify, I would go to radio of that.
Thanks, Will. That's fantastic.
Yeah, really enjoyed that. Thank you, Will.
That was brilliant. Thank you.
Now, we asked a few weeks back about people submitting to try and get the record for the most relevant location in which to listen to the podcast. Kiara emails, "Dear Beans, I submit for your consideration the most relevant location to listen to the podcast. I listened to the bicycles episode from within the Brompton factory."
Wow.
I'm just picturing the Brompton factory. It's basically a Wallace and Gromit sort of.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a Wallace and Gromit contraptions.
And at the end of the day, it folds up into its own smaller mini factory.
Killing all the people inside. Yeah. That's pretty cool. I used to Brompton about. I used to be able to get my Brompton out in less than a minute.
That's a quick draw, Brompton.
No, actually, I think I probably had down to 30 seconds or less to transform it so conveniently. In one moment, you could be cycling around on a sort of what felt from the cyclist's point of view like a sort of semi-adapted sort of pogo stick. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like a sort of pogo stick with shopping trolley technology. and curving around just with absolutely no real sense of strong balance or anything. Just a really like, just one second, you could be teetering about dangerously on a busy road. And within seconds, you could get off it. Within seconds, you could transform that essentially mobile sort of death trap into
extremely heavy chunk of metal.
The heaviest, chunkiest, sharpest briefcase imaginable.
Absolute shin masher, that thing, folded up.
Mashing up shins hither and thither. Like a sort of Greek chariot, actually.
Ones with the spikes on the end, on the sides, yeah.
Mm. Like a spiked chariot. And all for only £14,000.
You may remember us talking about Henry cutting in front of Sophie Alice Baxter in a greengrocer's.
Mm. Yes.
There's plums on the dance floor. I keep on trying to come up with a good way of... It's quite hard to, though, isn't it?
It's a hard one to spin yourself out of it.
There's plum juice on the grocery floor.
It's not good for you reputationally, is it, that anecdote?
No.
But then, a couple of weeks back, we heard from Chris, who too had Q-jumped Sophie Alice Baxter.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Anyway, we've now got a new Sophie Alice Baxter email from Joe.
Brilliant.
"I'm afraid to report this isn't the only food-based scandal that Miss Baxter has embroiled herself in recently, and I feel some context may exonerate Henry from his hurried plum guilt."
Oh, brilliant.
"My partner and I were both performing at a festival in August." Wonder who this could be. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bit vague. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm thinking the Pet Shop Boys comes to mind instantly. Mm-hmm. By the way, was the email signed off the Pet Shop Boy? or one of a Pet Shop Boy?
Just Joe. I don't think either of the Pet Shop Boys is called Joe.
Just Joe.
"On the Saturday morning, we awoke to find Miss Baxter's touring bus parked a few metres away from our tent. After she and her crew devoured a complimentary crew breakfast, we were alerted that Miss Baxter and her family were still hungry. This is where we courageously stepped up to the plate and personally delivered 3¾ sausages, a pile of overwhelmingly salty bacon, at least half a 50-gram tub of Anchor butter, a bowl and a butter knife to the ravenous band. Mm-hmm. We were more than happy to provide such services. However, what transpired may shock you to your very core. Are you ready? Yeah. We never received our bowl or butter or cutlery back."
Ooh.
"It was tricky to hold back tears as her tour bus disappeared into the night with our items still on board. Now, I would hate to suggest that Miss Baxter travels around the country pilfering sundries and crockery from humble working artists and performers, but unfortunately there seems to be little evidence to the contrary. She simply must be stopped."
Yeah, no one's written in with an anecdote about when Sophie Alice Baxter didn't steal their bowl.
Yes. "An anecdote about Sophie Alice Baxter returning crockery and serving plates have been thin on the ground." Is this a pattern?
So I think the sense from Joe is that, you know, none of us have a morally clean copybook, do we?
No, that's true. But what we don't know is the timeline. Is it this August? When was your Plum Fandango?
That's several years ago.
Thurago.
He's suggesting that that is her Bruce Wayne's parents getting shot in the alley origin story.
Yes, I'm suggesting that is when she was brutalized. And in lieu of dressing up as a bat, because that had been,
that'd been done,
that would have been her first instinct. Yeah. She instead has vowed to go on the road pilfering butter.
She's gone dark. You know, she's not become a vigilante. She's become the opposite. She's become a...
like a Joker character.
A Joker character.
Just chaos, crime for its own sake. Yeah. Because we know she doesn't need that bowl.
She doesn't need that bowl.
She's got a bowl.
She's got a bowl.
She worked hard for that bowl. She's got, probably got some really bloody nice bowls.
She's actually got five or six bowls that match, I'm going to guess.
Yeah, I bet she does, yeah.
I imagine they're probably non... Well, no, I'm... No, I think you probably can microwave them, actually. I mean, I think you can.
They're decent.
I think
bowls.
They're decent. I think, yeah, they're, yeah. I think they're
waterproof.
You can dishwash them. I think they're waterproof.
They're waterproof bowls. They're decent. They do the work. They're probably aesthetically pleasing as well as being, yeah, waterproof.
I mean, people like us, we have to just get by with our non-waterproof bowls, don't we? Which means...
My bowls, well, my bowls, I don't know, they're okay, but they can't go deeper than 10 metres, my bowls.
Tell you what I'd beware of is any bowl or mug which has little sparkly things on it, which is often... non-microwavable. If you then put that in the microwave to reheat something and pick it up, you get horribly, horribly burnt.
Your iron bowl.
Your studded bowl.
I've got a full medieval ironmonger's crockery kit. Yeah. It's all studded iron.
The Sean Bean range.
Now introducing the chainmail wok. They said you couldn't make a colander out of a battle axe. Well, that's before they'd come across the Sean Bean range. Now at John Lewis.
Buy the Sean Bean mace today. It turns anything into a colander. Just swing the mace into the item. What have you got? A colander. Turn a coconut into a colander. Turn his sibling into a colander. Turn a table into a colander. The Sean Bean mace colander.
Because a colander isn't an object, it's a process.
You bastard.
And can I say, I will not do demonstrations of any of this crockery with Elvis Crampton.
Although, do feel free to pay Elvis Crampton,
please,
to appear in the advert. Just, we cannot be on set together.
And the advert, I will insist, is directed by Marjorie Ironingboard. Please don't make a comment about her voice, because she's very sensitive about it.
And I won't take direction from her on set.
But by post. She directs by post.
It's post on a series of pre-recorded voice notes.
I can share Winnebago with her and Elvis Shrimp.
All do enjoy the same flavours of yogurts. So if someone is sorting puddings out at lunchtime, just please bear in mind.
Just one big yogurt, and we'll share the same spoon. It's no problem.
Also, if you're looking for extras, look no further than the Jambalaya twins. The thing is, though, I will not be on set with the Jambalaya twins, and actually each individual Jambalaya twin will not be on set with the other one of the Jambalaya twins.
But they are very close, so they can share the same Winnebago. It's to do with, you know, the relationship between twins is very, it's very close, but it can be very, very conflictual. Actually, if one of them gets ill, the other one will get ill. Now, in terms of lighting crew, have you ever come across...
Alfred Pancake. You won't know. You won't see him on IMDb. You won't. That's because he mostly does a lot of commercial work, corporate videos, and so on.
Now, Alfred Pancake, by the way, is not the same person as Dr. Pancake, who I recommend for catering. Dr. Pancake and the Meat Brigade are superb. Now, no one on this production can be on set at the same time. That's the only... Karen Moustache can come out and set up the lighting. She can put back into the Winnebago. Then Bob Carpenter will come out and set up the microphones and so on. So, but we... I think we can get it done, but just all individually. As a group, we're less than some of our parts. Together, we're awful, but individually, we're brilliant.
Right, so if you have ever lent anything to Sophie Ellis Bextor and she has returned it, please do email in. We've had an email from Fen and Diego.
Very good.
Now, this refers to our live shows. You may remember we had an email from someone who went to our live show, then went to Pret afterwards.
Ah, yes.
And witnessed someone's phone exploding, I think, in the Pret.
That's right, yeah.
Anyway, this is from Fen. I was an audience member at one of your recent live shows. It was the Sunday. The topic was moustaches. You asked me to stand up in the audience, and in a fit of starstruck madness, I claimed my beard was a moustache.
I do remember this.
Very good.
Ben also played the America jingle for my friend Diego. Now, in the show, I think in the live show, Henry might have talked about a hoisin duck rap from Brett.
Sounds like the sort of top draw live content that you get from this podcast, yeah. I'd say so.
I had to eat an entire hoisin duck rap in quite a hurry before
and
the
you didn't care
who
knew it.
I was brazen with it, yeah.
So they write, following Henry's talk of a hoisin duck rap from his beloved Brett. Mm.
Hoisin duck rap. Sorry, you've got COVID. I should let that go.
What did I say?
You said hoisin duck rap.
Instead of?
Hoisin duck rap. It's actually pronounced hoisin duck rap.
If you're looking for a leading lady, look no further than hoisin duck rap. I'm really questioning how I'm saying hoisin duck rap.
No, sorry. I think you said it fine, actually. Mm.
Well, he said it the same as you, Henry.
Following Henry's talk of a hoisin duck rap
there you go.
From his beloved Pret, we sheltered after the show from the rain in a nearby branch to try this discombobulating duck rap.
Yeah.
Diego's American travel charger blew a fuse seconds after we took a bite.
Oh. Hang on, is this the same story but from a different angle?
I think so.
Yeah, we've this is...
we've gone round the other...
Yeah. Next week it'll be from the point of view of the duck.
Yeah, so yeah, we had a previous email about the phone exploding.
So it was Diego's explosion.
It was Diego's explosion, and it was because he was using an American travel charger. And there was probably some kind of voltage mix-up, wasn't there?
Well, well.
That's extraordinary. Is that like a self-contained anecdote which kind of is infinite? Like, is it like, because it was all triggered by the hoisin duck, wasn't it?
Well, what I want to say is, if anyone else has an angle on this story...
Yes, we're open to all the angles.
Yeah.
Maybe you were a health inspector who was in the room. Mm-hmm. Maybe you were working in that Pret.
Maybe you were the fire brigade arson investigator that had to go and examine that burnt socket.
Yeah.
Maybe you were flying over London on the way to Marbella and had a bird's eye view of the whole thing from the sky at the time.
Get in touch.
Okay, so we've done the emails.
Poor Benny's forgotten. He's even forgotten what comes next. He doesn't even know that it's the Patreon bit now. This is the saddest thing I've ever seen.
Please give generously to the Patreon. I might not have long left. And I want to go on an all-expenses-paid cruise to the Norwegian fjords.
The bean machine is swallowing him from the inside.
But it can be dragged along the back of a cruise ship if the cruise ship is big enough, and he would be able to see the fjords. The cost is immense.
And the fjords would go grey forever.
The cost financially and the cost to Mother Earth is immense. So to offset that, we need to raise billions.
They're just bits of water going in near a cliff. I'm not sure if I actually like the fjords that much. No.
I just like the word fjord. Goodbye. But on a serious note, thank you to everyone who signed up on the Patreon.
Thank you.
If you would like access to our monthly bonus episode, then you can sign up. And if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout out from Mike in the Sean Bean Lounge.
You certainly do.
I couldn't be there last night because I'm isolating. But
well,
you were there, weren't you, Mike?
Of course I was. Well, I wouldn't have missed last night because it was the
Was it the premiere of the Sean Bean Lounge movie?
It was. Thank you, Ben.
Long awaited.
I'm amazed you remember that despite being so unwell.
Who made the cut, eh? Which patrons were lucky enough to get cast?
Well, why don't I tell you all about it?
We rolled out the red cliches last night at the Sean Bean Lounge for the premiere of the Sean Bean Lounge movie, starring Sean Bean as the Sean Bean Lounge and featuring Alexander Glackensmith as the Sean Bean Lounge outdoor toilets, Nick Caines as the Sean Bean Lounge bog roll, and David King as the bog roll holder. Akash Gill played a very watchable car park, and Robert Ellis a definitive trellis. Sean Bean himself was portrayed by Sinead Rippington from the left elbow down, Robert Hurst from the nose up, with Lee Myring on motion capture, Bernadette Sisk on left-sided voice, Dan Griffiths on bass, and Lisa Dorwood operating the marionette hinge joints. Sean Bean's Sean Bean Lounge stunts were undertaken by David Boker, while stunts required for the character of Sean Bean were undertaken by Kat Arjuna in the equine category, Scott McMillan in the broken glass category, and by Zoe Abbott in any situation requiring a stunt accompanied by the word bastard. The script was based on the intellectual property of Richard Clubb, which consists of a memory he had of Mark Shaw describing a dream in which KG and Matthew Rigby got stuck in a hammock made of Jules Burner before being swallowed by Ben Young in the form of Owen Thomas in the form of an orca with the face of Annie. This intellectual property was then forged into a coming-of-age story by Dan Griffiths, rewritten into a chalk-and-cheese buddy cop story by Josie Fraser-Shaw, before Rob J.N. took the story and adapted it into a rags-to-riches space opera. The first 74 drafts of the screenplay were written by Wolf Medallion and Stephen Galton, after which there was a complete page one rewrite by Sean Bean, using the pen name and pen person of Lindsay Robinson. During the screening itself, Luke Opie's portrayal of an animatronic dog received a standing ovation, although Luke wasn't in the film and performed his act under the fire escape sign. The score was created by Danielle Ellis and Fiona, with an illustration thing after their name that looks like a cat's face, but I'm not sure, using a specially created double-reeded bell-bottomed bean flute, which moved Alistair Ellen to tears but caused Tom to involuntarily move his bowels. Owing to a product placement deal by Millsy Bonce, Simon White, Sedge Jones and Rachel Farragher were required to continually pass through the foreground of every scene in Hyundai i10s. None of the funds from that deal made it to the extras budget, so all the extras were portrayed by Kevin O'Connor, who, thank goodness, had the presence of mind to borrow Dave DeVore's reversible jacket, Adam Cooper's reversible hat, and Sarah Borwick's reversible nose. The crew was a tight but capable unit and included Timothy Howell as Boom Gaffer, Tom Wiley as Best Buoy, James Hutchinson as Somoza Transportation co-captain, Carl Johnston as the Honeywagon Foley artist, Sam Pollard as Clapper Clapper, and Ashley Gizon as Liquid Grip. Tom Ralphs ran the catering but bollocks to the bolognese and gave Benjamin Bailey, Vicky Gregorich and James Balmain food poisoning, for which they were compensated with lifelong bolognese vouchers. Andrew Walter was turned into a new flavour of popcorn, Patrick Flynn refused to sign autographs, although in his defence wasn't asked for any, and Oliver Hills is still in the auditorium, hoping for a humorous post-credits scene that will never come. Please note we are not in a position to state whether or not any of the above names are aliases off Sean Bean. All we can say is that all those mentioned enjoy the same types of pizza. Thanks all.
That's the podcast. We're going to finish off with a version of our theme tune made by one of you, the listeners. We've had an email from Graham.
Hello, Graham.
He says, hello there, loquacious legumes. Mm. I like it.
Very good.
He says, I'm grateful for you for playing my James Bond-inspired theme tune.
Yeah, yeah.
That was good.
Remember that one? That was very good.
That was a good one. I remember that.
Ever since the episode dropped, my friends and family have talked of little else. In a desperate bid for further validation, I humbly submit my second effort, an homage to John Carpenter, director of such suspense classics as Halloween, yes, Assault on Precinct 13, and The Thing.
The Thing, very good film.
Mr. Carpenter is famous for composing and performing the synthesizer scores to many of his films, and I've tried to replicate his sinister style.
Lovely. That's a great shout. I'm very into that. I know you'll be very into that too, Henry. You love a bit of the old JC, don't you?
I do like some JC.
Lovely. Well judged, Graham. Very well judged. Thank you.
So here we go. This is from Graham in the New Forest, what Graham calls Hello Bean.
Very nice. Thank you, Graham. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks, bye. Bye.